Welcome to the Return to Vibrant Health podcast, a show highlighting the power of lifestyle instead of pills and procedures to treat and even reverse many of today's chronic illnesses. We explore how lifestyle, functional, and integrative medicine can address the root cause of disease, which is really what we're going after in order to create true healing. I'm your host, Susie Spell. I'm a nurse practitioner and a health coach trained in lifestyle medicine, as well as holistic and mind-body practices. I'm really on a mission to spread hope and healing, and in doing so, empower you to take control of your health destiny, and also to connect you with leaders in the field so you can continue to learn more and more on your journey. Okay, before we get started, I want to tell you about a free resource I created for anyone struggling with high blood pressure, which is also called hypertension. So this guide covers a few things. Here they are: why blood pressure is such a concern, how to take your blood pressure correctly at home based on the U.S. guidelines for hypertension management, a one-week blood pressure log that you can print out and have there by your monitor, the American Heart Association blood pressure categories chart, so you will know where your blood pressure falls at any given time, and some easy and powerful lifestyle tweaks, and of course, a little section on anxiety, because I think that plays a huge role with blood pressure management. So there's something in there for anxiety. And you can visit www.vitaltransformationsllc.com/taking-bp-at-home. And I will link it in the show notes, so don't worry about writing it down. And remember, it's really meant to guide and educate, and it's certainly not a substitute for that sacred and trusting relationship that you have with your primary medical provider. And always defer to them for specific guidance for you in particular. Let's get to it. Hello, today's guest is Xenia D'Ambrosi, an amazing woman and my friend who totally switched gears to reinvent herself and transform from a corporate finance professional to a passion-filled gardener and farmer florist. Xenia is the lead designer at Sweet Earth Co., a floral and garden design studio founded in 2012 and located on a sustainable flower farm in Pound Ridge, New York. Once a city girl, she now finds joy among the flower fields and gardens. Over 10 years ago, she found that having her hands in the soil brought healing and ignited a passion for sustainable gardening and horticulture. She believes that being around flowers and connecting with nature through gardening have the power to bring joy, inspiration, and healing. And as part of a Nature as Medicine movement myself, I know the power that this holds for people. There's plenty of research to back this up. Xenia and her team offer a variety of services at Sweet Earth Co., including seasonal florals for weddings, holidays, or other celebrations. They offer landscape design for your home garden. And Xenia takes pride in partnering with you to create the eco-friendly garden of your dreams through garden coaching and consulting. One of her more recent developments is the addition of teaching people how to create their own climate-friendly cutting gardens via an online platform and course. She's going to tell us about that and about her work and her passion and her mission, and I'm really excited to have her here. So welcome, Xenia. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for the invitation to be with you and to have this conversation amongst friends and also with your listeners. So thank you. As mentioned, Xenia D'Ambrosi is my name and Sweet Earth Co. is my company. We are a garden and landscape design company as well as a sustainable flower farm, and we operate out of Pound Ridge, New York, which is the lower Hudson Valley of New York. I grow on about a little under an acre I cultivate for my business, where we grow flowers and herbs. My services fall under three pillars, which is how I like to think about the company and the services that we offer and our mission. So we grow, we design, and we teach. And everything that we do falls under those three pillars. On the grow side, we are growing sustainably and organically, although we are not certified organic. We grow a multitude of flowers, both annual and perennial. a large percentage of what we grow are herbs. And we use those to offer a CSA, a local community supported agriculture program, where people sign up to get a bouquet a week. And we offer that for spring, summer. And then we have our focus in the fall is dahlias. And we also use our flowers for weddings and events. On the design side, that's where designing for weddings and events comes in. But also we design gardens, eco-friendly gardens, like you mentioned. So full landscapes or focus gardens, which includes native gardens, pollinator gardens, and my favorite, cutting gardens. And then on the teaching side, we've offered on-farm workshops and coaching and mentoring, both one-on-one or with garden clubs. And this past year, we have really elevated that to an online platform where we can get our message out and our teaching to a larger audience online. So thank you for being here.
Love all of what you just said. It's a lot. You've built a really nice business. And a piece of that we're going to get into, even just from talking with you offline or friends outside of here, is that you really bring a meaningfulness to it. Something that's deeper and richer than not just doing the work, but it's a meaningfulness, you know? So I love that piece. I love that part about it. And if you could comment on the deeper, more overarching mission that you have with this, like we were just speaking offline.
First and foremost, it's driven by the reason that I came to gardening in the first place, the reason that I made that transition from corporate finance and investments to the world of gardening, and then eventually to the world of flowers. Back in 2010, I received a cancer diagnosis. That was my wake-up call. I started growing my own food so that I can really track and know that it was chemical-free and healthy and nutritious. And I also started growing a lot of herbs and learning about herbs in an effort to support my immune system with herbs. At the same time, while I was going through treatments and all, I began volunteering at local farms. And that was horticulture therapy for me, having my hands in the soil, as you mentioned. There were times when I was connecting with the soil and connecting with the other volunteers and feeling a sense of community and connectedness that I was in the moment and wasn't really thinking or worrying about my diagnosis and my treatment. And then there were other times when I was out there again, weeding, planting, and I had the time to process all that I was going through and plan. So as I mentioned, it was healing. It was transformative for me, connecting with nature and doing so by having my hands in the soil. It did really ignite a passion. My family, you know, where I'm from Puerto Rico, I'm born and raised in New York, but my family is from Puerto Rico and they were farmers, land stewards, and it was something that was always a connection for me. And I felt like I was coming home. And so that passion was ignited and I just kind of took off from there. I went back to school and I became certified from the New York Botanical Gardens in gardening. I also had a focus on sustainable design. So in 2012 is when I left the corporate world about a year or so before that, maybe 2 years, and I started Sweet Earth Co. And I started initially with designing and installing edible gardens because friends and family were seeing what I was doing on my own property and why I was doing it and how I was benefiting from all of that. So I started doing it for friends and family and then expanded from there. Substantial client base in edible gardens, moved from there into sustainable gardens, full landscapes that really took in all elements of a sustainable landscape, including composting systems and all of that. You know, I focused on ecological improvements to the landscape in the form of sustainable gardens, of which native gardens, pollinator gardens, cutting gardens, these are all examples that can be woven into your landscape. One of the particular garden installations that I began doing a lot of were cutting gardens, and I caught the flower bug. Once I started installing and learning about cutting gardens, I just could not get enough of them. And so I started practicing what I preach on my own property and really converted a large portion of it to a cutting garden. And so that's where the growing started to take place. And from there, the teaching was just a natural outflow from all of that. So the growing the designing and the teaching all stem from my experience and how I came to, you know, to gardening in the first place, mm-hmm. my why.
I love that, because what you're speaking to is that reconnection with our earth, you know, our planet, and also putting a little bit of that time. You said you used that time with your hands in the soil to process what was going on with you, with yourself at the time. And so sometimes in our busy life, we don't do that as much, right? So that can be very healing. And from the medical side, I'm in the, you know, medical side, you know, there's even meta-analyses on the benefits of gardening, which include stress relief. There's benefits to your mental and emotional well-being, your physical well-being, more active out in the sun. I mean, there's so many reasons why that could have been a healing situation for you. And for me, I feel like it's, we almost have an epidemic of people being disconnected from self and from planet. And gardening is one way that we could bring some of that reconnection back. And so I wanted to ask you a couple of things. You mentioned the words a couple of times, sustainable, you said, and eco-friendly. So can you tell us, what does that really mean? What does sustainable really mean? What does eco-friendly mean? How those apply to all of us and why we should be interested in it?
Sure. So I think, I mean, there's a broad-based definition, but we can take various aspects and of the definition. One, it's working with nature and not against it. It's supporting the whole ecosystem. And so from a mindset perspective, recognizing that our landscapes and our environment is a shared habitat. It is us. It is pollinators. It is wildlife. We are part of the environment. And so I come to sustainable gardening thinking we're part of the problem, but we're also part of the solution. So when I design and install and even maintain my own fields, it's from a sustainable or regenerative or a ecologically friendly perspective, which is I don't till my soil. I nurture my soil. I really focus on the biology of the soil and what it needs, because if you fortify the soil, you support the soil, it will produce a healthy plant. And a healthy plant is one that is thriving, it is producing, it is highly nutrition. I like to say I grow healthy soil and the plant is just a happy consequence of that. So those are elements of kind of sustainable and eco-gardening, which is working with nature, not against, and supporting more life, whether it's in the soil or in the environment, pollinators, as well as what it produces for you.
I think a lot more people are becoming aware of this. From my work, a lot of people started asking me, well, isn't our soil not as good as it used to be? And that's how I got interested in soil. I was like, wait, what are they talking about? So this is what you're commenting on, a mindset shift for our soil and how we look at our natural world and our connection and role in it. And also, I think of that as the macro. And then for me, like our body is the micro. It's the same thing. We need a mindset shift with our bodies. They want to be in harmony. And there's we are a huge ecosystem, just our body, let alone the rest of the world, right?
Right. I make that analogy as well often about how I look and analyze soil is how I think about my own health and our bodily systems. We've been disconnected. We were part of this. We were not nurturing our soil. We were depleting it. And so that has ramifications both in the quality of what we produce and also the pollinators and the beneficial insects that it brings in and that it supports. We're part of an ecosystem. So what we do will have ramifications throughout the entire system.
Right. So what do you think some of our responsibilities for that are, or like ecological responsibilities as far as that goes?
You know, it's a big problem. It can be overwhelming. The statistics are staggering. You know, we've got loss of wildlife, global insects are on the decline, plant species are on the decline, biodiversity in general has been negatively impacted, climate change. It's scary. It could be overwhelming, but I think the main mindset shift that I do want to get across is that we can start small. Every little bit helps. we can do so in our own spaces, whether it's our landscapes, our patio, whatever the case may be, we want to focus on improving biodiversity. We can do that by reducing lawn space and converting some of that lawn into ecologically friendly gardens, whether it's herb gardens, cutting gardens, even if it's a small patch. If we all do our own, take our small step, it's kind of like a patchwork. We can stitch it all together and make an impact that way. So focus on your own space, no matter how big or small, and take simple, manageable steps. It's really the process, the mindset and the process, and the end goal comes out of that. We worry about the end goal so much, and I'm not saying it's not important, but success really comes from process and practice.
Right. And I will say for me, I always have considered myself having like I can't grow plants, you know, the black thumb, right? So I have a little bit of fear around, okay, if I'm going to take a little patch and do something with it in my lawn, is it going to survive? Am I going to kill everything? Like I have a little bit of that block. So how would you suggest somebody who has fear of killing everything you put down, how can we move past that? Maybe it's I don't have the knowledge, right? Which is where your information would be helpful, you know, if I had a little guidance.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot to learn. I'm still learning. I'm a forever student. However, first is understanding that whatever you do is going to be beneficial. It's a learning process. You will make mistakes, but there's always tomorrow. There's always next season. What I tell all of my students and what my course helps with a lot is the planning part of it. It's akin to measuring twice and cutting once. Plan location, plan plant choices. Plant choices are a key element of an eco-friendly garden. So mix shrubs and native plant species and make sure you include herbs. You know, given our changing weather patterns, maybe focus on natives, focus on drought-resistant plants, focus on plants for difficult spots. So plant choices is one. Location is another. You will have success if you understand the kind and quality of soil you have. If you observe, you know, how much sun and shade you have, understand your planting zone, you know, have that data point. So plant choices, which is making the right plant choices, selecting the right location and timing, understanding when to plant things and when to seed them, when to plant them, when to harvest them. And that is, again, all driven by your planting zone and your growing season. So having that information is helpful. But again, noting these things up front will help with stem any mistakes, give you more confidence out in the garden. Once you have a plan, put it in motion, and that gives you a structure to follow and confidence in what you're doing.
Thank you for that. And actually, we were going to talk about your course later, but since we're talking about some of these things that you're mentioning, the course that you have coming up, mm-hmm. do you want to talk about that a little bit now? Would that be okay?
And sure.
And then we can maybe circle mm-hmm. back to some herb garden thing. I'd love to know about growing some herbs at home. So, but if you could tell us a little bit about the course and how you help people in the online space, maybe that aren't with you or can't be mm-hmm. with you or, you know, live a few states away.
As I mentioned, I do a lot of teaching on farm and also in written form through my blogs and some free learning resources that I provide. So I would welcome everyone to visit my website at sweetearthco.com. Right now, I do have a soil health starter kit that really focuses and teaches on what is your soil and understanding your soil better so that you can nurture it. And then just today, I posted something about setting goals for your garden. At the start of a new year, we can take fresh new steps, either improving an existing garden or starting a new one. With respect to my course, that's really where I poured my heart and soul into creating what basically is a deep dive. It's a step-by-step taking someone from, you know, a basic beginner or novice to actual design and installation of a cutting garden that produces for them a full season of blooms that they can design with, is create bouquets with for themselves and for their community. It's a course designed around 6 modules, and each module has several lessons, video tutorials. It's got a 50 plus page workbook that goes along with it. There's several bonuses as well, including a tutorial on how to read a soil test, a tutorial on a composting guide, a tutorial on pests and diseases, where I dive deep into pests and diseases and how to manage them in an eco-friendly way, as well as some design tutorials, how to create a centerpiece. This year, we've updated the program to include floral recipes for bouquets. And it really takes you from the initial design and planning portion to actual execution and every step of the way, so that at the end, you've got confidence in creating a cutting garden or a cutting patch that provides you with a bouquet or beautiful blooms all season long. There's a Facebook community that's part of the program. There's also some live Q&A. So these programs are video tutorials and pre-recorded that you can take or follow at your own pace. So it's self-paced, but there is a live component to it where students can have their questions answered in real time. But what I like about the Facebook community is, besides the support of all the students that are part of it, it's an opportunity for me to come back in on a regular basis and remind the students of what they learned in the course at a relevant time. The course launches in February. There's a wait list now. But registration opens beginning of February, and by Valentine's Day, if you've signed up, that's when we open the doors and you received your educational content, and you can go through it at your own pace, as I mentioned. But come April or May, when you start really working outside and in the garden, I'm there in the Facebook community to remind you of what those initial steps were, so that there isn't a disconnect between when you learn it and when you actually execute.
If it's a self-paced course, the doors open in February. Mm-hmm. So is the thought that they'll go through the material before the growing season is the intention, right?
Correct.
Because then you can take the action.
And I will have, during that time period, 3 live Q&A sessions every other week, so that as they're going through the material, they can ask questions and get their questions answered in real time. And then come April or May, whenever it is that the work actually happens a little earlier if you're going to sow your own seeds inside, but they can turn to the Facebook community, of which I will be there to support and help them along the way. And that is throughout the growing season. Okay. I also offer a grow along, which is kind of above and beyond for those who want to grow exactly what I'm growing. But the course is really the kind of the meat of the program. It's where the framework and all the information and all of the support, growing your own, designing and installing and growing your own cutting patch.
Right. So it sounds like that comes before the grow along almost, like that's the foundational
yes.
knowledge mm-hmm. and you're starting your experience if you're not experienced mm-hmm. in gardening like myself. Okay, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the herbs. Can you touch on maybe what you learned in your cancer journey? You know, what were some of the things either that you learned then or have learned over the years that may be helpful for people who are wanting to bring that in either in culinary purposes with what they're fixing, you know, a meal, or something more like a tea or something that could be restorative and rejuvenating or calming? So can you tell us a little bit about that and how we could do that in our own home?
Sure. So I started with herbs, and some of them I grew from seed, many of the annuals like parsley and basil and cilantro. Others are perennial and a little more woody, and so I started them from small plants or from cuttings. The examples of that would be oregano and sage, lavender. But when I started really focusing on herbs, I learned about their medicinal benefits. And again, not a doctor and not using them as medicine, but really to support wellness. And I really looked to do a couple of things. One is I focused on herbs that were had antimicrobial or antibacterial properties to keep me strong so that as I went through my treatments, which were debilitating, I can support my immune system that way. I also learned about herbs that were diuretics that would help flush out. And I learned about herbs that I had that had always been part of my diet that really turned out to be more nervine, you know, calmative herbs like chamomile and lavender and all of that. So recognizing what I had been doing all along and then layering onto that other herbs specifically for their wellness or medicinal benefits, excuse me. So as I started growing them, I realized that many of those also produce beautiful flowers and that were great as cut flowers. So the herbs that I grow, I use fresh in my bouquets. I use them fresh for culinary purposes. I dry them for, and I include them in dry bouquets, or I dry them for teas. And again, the herbal teas that I blend are based on, I like to call it a flower power. And the blends that I create are based on medicinal properties or the wellness benefits of the herbs. But there's so much usage that one or a combination of herbs can provide in my flower field. And I think that was a one really nice surprise that many of them produce such a beautiful flower. I use some of them for flowers. I use some of them for foliage.
Okay. That was a really nice explanation of that. What would you say your favorite herb is?
Oh, I guess it depends on the season, but obviously, no, I'd have to say lavender.
Why?
Just the kind of soothing aroma. It's beautiful in bouquets. You can use it fresh and dried in bouquets. It's great for crafting. It's great for, you know, you can use so many different, you can use the flower and you can use the leaf. And I use it in teas. I use it in bath teas. I use it for culinary purposes. You can actually, there's some great recipes out there that use lavender. So I think just the smell of it, the aroma is what really gets me.
I know, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Let's see. My next favorite would probably be lemon verbena.
Again, try that one.
The aroma. I guess that's really the sense that I value, I guess, when it comes to the herbs. The aroma is really what hooks me in. But it's great in teas, both hot teas or cold drinks. And it's a diuretic. So it's got a medicinal benefit as well.
What's your favorite flower?
Again, seasonally. Ask me in spring and it's going to be like the peony or a ranunculus. Ask me in the summer and it's probably, summer is a little different. Summer, I tend to go for plants that have really great foliage.
Like what? What would be an example?
Coleus is one. The basils. I grow some basils that have amazing, like the dark purple foliage. And then fall, it's the dahlia. And I think if I had to pick just one, it would be the dahlia.
Yes, it seems like you like those.
There's just so many different forms, so many different colors. They can be dried as well. They're edible. Actually, the tuber is edible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And what about, so I know you're in New York, right? Mm-hmm. So are there winter things that you grow? Like, do you have a greenhouse?
I have a small greenhouse, but it's really, I use it mostly for propagating, for starting seed. Okay. I don't have anything growing right now to harvest. You know, our trees and shrubs have already defoliated. So what I focus on now is providing dried bouquets of flowers that I've grown during the season and dried. And now I bring in flowers. And then I can also, in the greenhouse, have things that I've propagated. And so I've got plants I'm working with, but in terms of designing, I will use currently either dried flowers or plants, container gardens and things like that. So
they're beautiful too.
And, right? And you know, as what I found is that as our climate is changing, my growing season is expanding. My flowers in the field right now, I've got you know, tulip bulbs planted. I've got cool season flowers already seeded out there, and daffodils and all sorts of things that are already in the ground, and they're coming up earlier. Mm. And frost is a little later.
Right. So what you're talking about, climate change in terms of the warmer weather.
Correct. It's a combination of the warmer weather and the erratic weather. But the USDA recently updated their plant hardiness zones. That came out in November of this year. Overall, the general shift is in the warming up of the zones. So I had initially been, when I first started this flower journey or this gardening journey, we were zone 6 or maybe zone 5, pushing into zone 6. Now in this current update of the plant hardiness zone, we are zone 7.
Yes, that's a whole bigger issue that we don't have time to go down the rabbit hole. But I imagine that in your work, you have noticed the difference even in the 10 or 11 years that you've been at this.
Which makes it even more important to focus on including a variety of plants that improve biodiversity. And so because those weather patterns affect the pollinators. And so you want to be sure that you are providing, you know, in your maintenance as well of your gardens, that you're leaving your leaf litter in, that you're providing something that early on in the season for pollinators, and that you are not cutting them your spent plants at the end of the season to allow, you know, the pollinators to have some seed heads, or, you know, to share what you've produced, and so that they have something to eat over the winter. And so plant choices really go a long way for improving biodiversity, as does, you know, the way you plant, no tilling, you know, not using insecticides, using organic fertilizers, providing homes for habitat. So bringing in bird baths or bat houses or bird houses or anything like that. So you're considering the entire ecosystem.
Right. It's almost like I imagine like you're broadening your horizons to incorporate all the different life that's teeming around.
Just expand that circle a little bit.
And yes, and biodiversity is essential for human health as well. So, you know, it really, I think biodiversity is key everywhere, and losing that can threaten people and planet, right?
So yeah, every little bit helps.
It's incredibly important.
Every little bit helps. And so that would be my kind of my main focus and takeaway.
Mm-hmm. So where can people learn more about you? I know that you already mentioned your website, but could you mention it again and the course? How could people find the course?
So my website is Sweet Earth Co. And that's where that would be my first stop from, you know, I do have an Instagram page and a Facebook page and all of that, and a YouTube channel, all under the name Sweet Earth Co. But my website is where you can access my blogs, any PDF or free learning resources that I have there, as well as access the waitlist and the information about the course. And that is sweetearthco.com/cutting/garden. I will provide you with the link that you can include in your show notes. What I'd also like to provide to your listeners is a 10% discount to the course.
Amazing.
And the discount code for that would be Vibrant Health. And I welcome everybody to head on over to sweetearthco.com/cutting-garden-course. And that's where they'll find information about everything that's included in the course, as well as all the bonuses, and be able to, you know, sign up for the wait list.
Mm. Okay, thank you. And tell us, is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you think is really important that you want people to know, especially, you know, people who are listening to this are going to be people interested in health, and also, you know, some of my colleagues. So anything else that you would want to tell people just in general, or medical folks?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that first and foremost, to really consider making a mindset shift if you haven't already. And that is that you can be part of the solution and take small steps, and that every little bit helps, whether it's actions on improving biodiversity or your, you know, climate action or whatever it is, every little bit helps. And if we all focus on doing our own part in our own spaces, we're creating, like I said, this patchwork of progress that when stitched together really has a bigger impact on improving biodiversity and making ecological change. And when doing so, assessing your space and determining that there is room, no matter how small, to improve the space with an eco garden, and that, you know, a cutting garden is an excellent option, because not only does it improve biodiversity, but it produces beautiful blooms that you could have in your home all season long, or create a bouquet and provide to your community. So it does a lot more than just, you know, produce beautiful flowers. It is really a way of connecting you to nature and connecting you to your community.
I love that part. And the phrase you've used, which I really love, is that patchwork of progress. That's a great phrase.
Yeah, you're part of the solution.
Thank you so much, Xenia. I love seeing you, talking to you, and it motivates me to want to attempt again to grow some more flowers.
I invite you and your listeners as well. Today I launched, we're nearing the end of the year. January 1st is right around the corner. And by the time this airs, we'll be, you know, really looking towards making changes and improvements and resolutions and all the goal setting for the new year. And I've provided a guide for what I like to call the goal list, goal setting for gardens. And it's a free resource to help you plan your garden, your ecological garden.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a joy.